Mr. Stegall.
Thank you, Judge Easterbrook.
Judge Wood.
Judge Dender. The first issue in this very relaxed procedural due standard process standard for academic judgment is, did I adequately plead the existence of constitutionally protected property interest? Judge Murphy faulted me for not alleging a specific promise that the dental school made as a part of the contract. The problem with that is that there is no, the specific promise is not the basis of the contract right. It's the Illinois courts have held, it's similar to the general obligation of good faith and fair dealing that is implied as a matter of law in any contract is.
So under your theory, all disgruntled students in state universities can bring a due process-based claim against their professors in the universities if they think they've gotten an unfair grade?
No, that doesn't mean you qualify on the second part is what I'm here to argue about. That's a very tough standard, the procedural due process. But as far as the existence of a property interest is, the Supreme Court of Illinois said it time and again, the student either pays the application fee as an applicant or pays the tuition and shows up for class, which I specifically allege is the obligation to act in good faith in accordance with the catalogs and brochures is implied as a matter of law.
Do you have any case that has found a property interest in this situation? I've been thinking about the cases brought by students, and you have one line of cases where their First Amendment rights, for example, when students are dismissed from school and they get a hearing, Tinker and cases like that. You have another line of cases where students are complaining that their Fourth Amendment rights were violated when they have to be drug tested or their lockers are searched or what have you. I am not personally familiar with any case in which somebody who flunks out of a state school and is dismissed for poor academic performance has been able to show a constitutionally protected property interest in what that school is doing. School said we're offering classes. He went and sat in the classes. That's about it.
Well, the Board of Regents versus Roth says they're formed by state law.
Right, and that was a professor, you know, who had a contract that was enough of a property interest to count it as, quote, new property.
Well, the case is...
You may also be aware, counsel, that people who don't get tenure frequently sue and say, I was good enough for tenure. And those claims never win in federal
court. Oh, no, there's no contract right to that.
Oh, no, there is a contract. There'll be statutes and bylaws of the university, and they'll say there's a contract. But the court will say two things. It said, one, part of this deal is that the adequacy of your performance is reviewed by the university rather than the court, and that's what the university is saying here. The adequacy of the performance on the tests is reviewed by the dental school, not by the court. The other kind of thing the court will say is what we said in Mid-American Waste Systems against Gary, which is that an opportunity to litigate in state court is all the process due for a claim of breach of contract. And that, therefore, a claim saying, I want the federal court to adjudicate whether there was breach of contract, is sanctionably frivolous.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying that Board of Regents versus Roth, in many cases, Perry versus, there's a particular sentiment, there is a particular case I recall with Judge Posner over the legitimate right to entitlement that was dissent, I think it was Vail back in the 80s, and there was a divided court, is there is a contract right that's enforceable, that's a property interest. Now, it doesn't have to be breached.
And we held in Mid-American Waste a claim of breach of contract. The process that is due is the opportunity to litigate in state court.
I'm not saying...
You don't seem to be aware of this court's precedents.
Oh, I am aware of the distinction, but breach is not an element of a property interest.
Well, look, I mean, I think we're slipping a little beyond the property interest to whether there is any kind of showing on this record that Mr. Hlavacek didn't get ample process, even before we start talking about state court. Was it 7 or 8 hearings he had? I mean... maybe there was some mix-up about this July 9, 2007 letter, but then there was hearing after hearing after hearing.
Yes, there was.
So and I can't even fathom how there can be a lack of process argument on his behalf.
If you are basing every hearing on a fictitious hearing originally that didn't exist.
What's the difference? He knows why they're proposing to dismiss him because he keeps failing classes.
Well, their obligation is, well, all right, we'll ignore the fictitious hearing.
Yeah, I'm just saying, what difference does it make once there are all these other hearings?
All right, I will throw out the fictitious hearing, even though they kept saying you had a hearing when it was patently false.
You say they kept saying it, but they immediately conceded that was wrong.
No, they never did. They kept saying you had this hearing. So that questions right away whether this was professional judgment is you continue to rely on an event that's totally fictitious and never been documented. I'll put that aside. But that's why that's relevant, Judge Wood, is that you give due deference to the professional judgment, which we are doing. But what professional judgment it is to all the process all the way up to President Broussard saying you had this hearing and it's fictitious, it didn't exist.
But you can't mean that he never had the chance to say I wasn't fairly graded.
Yes, because the other part of my argument is, the two allegations are, is that, and it wouldn't go to just a hearing, that the procedural due process is of a fair consideration of professional judgment. Is there's no fair consideration of professional judgment here. When two grades are changed, one professor is ordered to and resigns over it, and another one grades him as passed and then changes it later.
Isn't that your substantive due process argument?
Well, I think procedural here is almost substantive, Your Honor,
You're not appealing the ruling on the substantive due process theory.
No, because procedural, as Judge Stevens stated, it is so loose that it's almost substantive. Is all you have to do is exercise your professional judgment and listen. And what I'm saying is when you have a fictitious hearing, even though it may not be directly relevant, and you're relying on two grades that have been changed, we got a serious problem here. Now, it's incredible to believe that, but I found that district court case out of Ann Arbor at the University of Michigan that less happened to that student. And the district judge sustained it, and it went through to trial. There's a verdict. But, I mean, this is just incredible to me. I did do my due diligence because it first came in. You say, this can't be. But that's what the evidence is, that they changed two grades. Dr. Sung left because of it, and the other one, it's posted that you passed, and then, oh, no, you didn't. You failed by one point. Then you add in the fact is every level she went to is, but you had this fictitious hearing. Now, what I say to you is that is not professional judgment. That is what procedural due process requires. The constitutionally protected interest is the property right, not the state law question of whether it's breached. The specific promise is implied in law, which I alleged. And the thing I would add to the pleading is where you weren't specific enough, even in Illinois state court said, as to the Lincoln Christian College is, well, you know what your brochures are and your handbooks is. That's not going to add anything here to your factual pleading. And I think that's obvious under our notice pleading here that's not required. We're not going down that route. Is that the law is that this is a contract, right, and that it is protected, and breach is not an element. I agree, Judge Easterbrook, that you got a right to breach a contract. That doesn't mean your procedural due process kicks in. But if you have a contract right, the Supreme Court said that it's enforceable and you have to give hearings. And in this case, the procedural due process right, Judge Tinder, is so diluted, it's like substantive due process. I mean, are they fair? Did they listen? Are these academics? And that's, I noticed I've got my rebuttal time, so if there's any questions, I'll take them later.
Thank you, Mr. Stiegel. Mr. Wilson.
Good morning.
I think you'll find that it is unnecessary to present oral argument, though we won't stop you if you disagree.
Thank you, Your Honor. If it's unnecessary, I would waive my oral argument.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The case is taken under advisement.